Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Okay, so before we hop into the next interview, I just want to read a testimonial that somebody gave us from the last time we ran this Move to Improve challenge. This is the first time ever in my life I've joined a challenge like this. I love everything I've learned, unlearned, and relearned from the challenge. The program was thoughtfully put together and so accessible to all levels. I love how each week builds up for the next week, and we also get to repeat certain exercises to help rewrite those new pathways in our bodies. Your cues are one of the easiest to understand, even for parts of the body that are difficult to imagine, like the pelvic floor muscles. The kind of support we have from you and your team is incredible. And that is just everything we want people to experience in this challenge, feeling new things in their bodies, understanding the cues on different exercises that they may have never been able to get to click before, feeling that strength in their body, building back that baseline mobility. And this is what Jen does so incredibly. It's something that has always inspired me about her, and the way that she delivers her content is the education, the way that she cues things and explains things so that you actually understand them and feel empowered to do them in your own body. Now is the time to get in. We have a code that you can still get a discount on the challenge. If you use code MOVE at checkout, you'll get a discount before we start on March 6th. Make sure you come in and start with us. There are prizes, there are live sessions that we have with special guests and with Jen herself, where she can answer your questions. We are always there for you throughout this challenge. If you're ever having any difficulties, if you ever need any modifications, you can always just reach out to us. So go down to the link that's down in the show notes. It's jen.health/move, and I guarantee you will be feeling some of the same things you heard in that testimonial I read earlier. Down to the link in the show notes, make sure you use code MOVE at checkout so you can get that discount, and we will see you on March 6th. Welcome back to another interview, and happy National Nutrition Month. And to celebrate, we will be celebrating with Tamar Samuels, who's a registered dietitian and nutritionist whose unique and holistic approach to healthcare integrates functional medicine, positive psychology, and behavioral change techniques pulled from her training in clinical nutrition and coaching science. Tamar has her master's in clinical nutrition from New York University and is a nutritional board certified health and wellness coach through the National Board of Medical Examiners. Her work in private practice includes treatment of disordered eating, stress management, PCOS, and sustainable weight loss. Tamar is the co-founder of Kalina Health with fellow RD Vanessa Rossetto. And this interview is just so great in talking about sustainable lifelong behavior change and how we really need to start to shift the paradigm of how we view diet and eating culture. Tamar, thanks so much for coming to spend some time with us today, really to talk everything diet and nutrition and developing good, sustainable lifelong habits when it comes to eating. And I think that good lifelong sustainable part is what a lot of people don't pay attention to, and it's what you love to talk about with your clients and patients.
Hi, Jen and Dominic. Yes, thank you so much for that introduction. I think the nutrition space is really confusing for people, and there's a lot of misinformation and information overall, and you know, diet culture has really been driving a lot of nutrition information in most of our experience with nutrition. And so having a different voice that speaks to science and sustainability is what we are super passionate about talking about when it comes to nutrition care at Kalina Health.
That's perfect. I feel like that's what people are needing and wanting more of, especially because, like you said, it gets so saturated out there in terms of what you hear and what you're supposed to believe. And then sometimes it becomes so structured that you fall into potentially eating disorders without even really realizing. So can we talk about that a little bit? Like, how do we even start to uncover if I'm falling into an eating disordered pattern?
Yeah. And so I really like to distinguish between eating disorders and disordered eating. Eating disorders is on the end of the spectrum where, you know, it's diagnosable based on the DSM and, you know, huge impact on quality of life. There's diagnostic criteria for certain eating disorders, whereas disordered eating and a strained relationship with food is a little bit more nuanced and subtle. And I think people really, if we can identify the signs of more disordered eating and relationship with food concerns, then we can prevent the eating disorder that could potentially occur as a result of, you know, long-term disordered eating. And so I think it's really important for, you know, mindfulness is, of course, it's such a buzzword, but it's so important to have perspective around our behaviors and our thoughts around food and our relationship with food and our bodies. And oftentimes we don't have insight into that perspective because we're just so deep in it that it's hard for us to see things in context. And so it can be really helpful to work with someone, obviously, who's a professional to be able to see the things that you don't see. But I think some early signs that you're starting to have, you know, disordered eating or a more strained relationship with food are obsessive thoughts around food, worries and fear around food. So for me personally, I had a chronic GI condition that I was managing called SIBO, or small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And it's at the time, this was, you know, almost 10 years ago, at the time it was not that well known, difficult to diagnose. There wasn't a ton of research. And so I was just in perpetual discomfort with gas and bloating. And every time I ate, my symptoms would get worse. And, you know, my GI doctor gave me some information about a therapeutic diet called the low FODMAP diet, which is an evidence-based diet for managing IBS. But she didn't give me anything beyond that. She was like, do some research on this and like, try it out. Wow. And it's actually a super restrictive diet, which we can dive into. But ultimately, in sort of self-treating, with this restrictive diet to manage my symptoms, I started to really get, you know, food fears, and I was really limited in my food choices and felt scared, you know, going out to eat, and really felt limited in my social activities, and which ultimately affected my relationships, right? And so these were the things that, in retrospect, would have been like red flags for, you know what, like something is happening here. This is not supporting your mental health. It's not supporting your quality of life. So there's certainly like some earlier signs of disordered eating and generally, you know, disordered relationship with food that you can catch before it gets to that eating disorder phase.
No, I think that's super important to just point out. And like you said, kind of having that mindfulness surrounding those thoughts that might come up when you think about eating a meal or eating a snack. Is there something that always jumps into your mind first? And I wonder if you'd be okay with me asking a question about kind of your experience with the FODMAP diet. Like, did you feel like there were beneficial components to eating underneath that FODMAP umbrella, you know, outside of when it started to become obsessive? Like, do you feel like that did support your body in helping address kind of the SIBO that you were dealing with?
Yeah, it's the low FODMAP diet is an evidence-based, which means that there is a pretty large body of research on this therapeutic diet for the treatment of irritable bowel syndrome. There's not as much research for low FODMAP diet for management of symptoms with SIBO. But a lot of GIs and a lot of dietitians will do low FODMAP for SIBO symptom management in the short term. And ultimately, the low FODMAP diet is a short-term diet, right? It's a 30 to 60 day diet in which we eliminate high FODMAP foods, which are medium chain fermentable carbohydrates and poorly absorbed carbohydrates that tend to cause diarrhea, constipation, and bloating in sensitive individuals. And so the goal of the diet is to eliminate high FODMAP foods, not eliminate them entirely, but reduce the amount that you're having, and then systematically reintroduce them so you can test which FODMAPs you are sensitive to. Mm. And so that is the part that people really miss. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, people are all gung-ho about doing elimination diets, but not everyone talks about the most important part of any therapeutic elimination diet, which is reintroduction. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the goal is for you to liberalize your diet and have a clear understanding of what your sensitivities are. And if you never reintroduce, then you aren't gaining that information. You know, I had a patient who was on the low FODMAP diet for 10 years.
Wow.
10 years. And she achieved some level of symptom management, but it's really just a Band-Aid, right? She's not addressing the root cause. And with further testing, we were able to understand, oh, actually, you have an enzyme deficiency. And we can we did do a systematic reintroduction. We found out that she was sensitive to just one of the FODMAPs, fructose, and she could liberally eat the other FODMAPs without symptoms. And we added in prescription enzymes, pancreatic enzymes, and her symptoms almost completely resolved, right? So she literally had spent 10 years restricting her diet and had like terrible fears of certain foods and was really limited to low fiber foods, because the low FODMAP diet is ultimately relatively low in fiber as well. So that's why it's so important to work with a professional who can really like support you in understanding your health condition and the nuances of nutrition and how it can support health outcomes and symptoms and not just weight management. Certainly, like, weight management can be a part of that picture, but it's really about quality of life and health too, ultimately.
I mean, that's what it should be, right? Is coming back to the ultimate goal, the ultimate why. Like, if you're coming to lose weight, well, but why? You know, and getting people back to that idea, I think, is so important. And I love that you highlight, you know, these elimination diets, which there's a lot of different kinds, and some might be beneficial in that short term, but you know, a lot of them are covering up symptoms rather than really getting down to the root cause. But I think for a lot of people too, it's who do I turn to? And how do I know where to go and what kind of testing to do? So how have you kind of brought that forth to really help people start to connect with a one-on-one provider where they can get a little bit more in-depth testing and get this personalized approach?
Yeah, it's really disappointing because the nutrition space has been reserved for the wealthy elite.
Yeah.
It is expensive. You have to pay out of pocket. Most people, 92% of dietitians are white women. And so that is a barrier to care in that, you know, food is really personal. And sometimes people feel like they want to relate to their practitioner in order for them to have a relationship and be able to make actual changes in their health, right? Like, our health is really personal. People feel judged when they talk about food, right? Yeah. There's this huge stigma about dietitians and nutrition in general, in that it's not accessible and really only like wealthy people can have access to it. And so my co-founder and I, Vanessa Rosetto, we're both women of color, we're both dietitians, and we both practiced comprehensive, evidence-based, personalized nutrition care and decided it was really important for our businesses before we joined together. Separately, we decided that it was really important for us to take insurance. Mm-hmm. And so when we decided to form Kulina and make this care accessible to everyone, taking insurance is at the foundation of the care that we provide. That gives people accessibility to our services, because ultimately everybody eats, right? Like we all mm-hmm. eat every day, all the time. we don't have someone we can talk to about nutrition. Nutrition is arguably the foundation of health, right? Yeah. We know that diet and lifestyle have one of the biggest, if not the biggest impact on prevention and management of chronic disease. Chronic disease is the number one and the number two reasons for the highest mortality rates in the country, right? And so yeah. we know that we need to pay attention to nutrition to prevent chronic disease and manage chronic disease and ultimately like support quality of life and prevent mortality. But there isn't a go-to source of trustworthy, accessible, sustainable nutrition care. And that's why we created Kulina Health, because of health equity, ultimately, right? Like yeah. everybody deserves access to this care. It doesn't matter how much money you have.
That's so great.
Yeah, I think that's so incredible and so important, because just like you said, I mean, even insurances and in general in our traditional Western medical system we have in our country, we do not prioritize wellness and we do not prioritize preventative health, and that you have this option for people, Kulina Health, that does take insurance and is becoming more accessible to larger amounts of people is so incredible.
Can I ask, do you have to get a prescription with your insurance in order to come see you, or because a lot of times I just don't hear of doctors prescribing RDs, and thus, you know, you had a surgery or you had gastric bypass, yeah. you know, like unless you had something really extreme happen, I just don't see enough people getting referred to RDs.
Jen, it's like such a good point. And that's part of the problem, is that the medical community isn't aware of the value of dietitians. Yeah. And the regular community, people who are interested in health and wellness and need help, aren't aware of the value of dietitians. So yeah. really, a lot of this is about awareness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a big part of the work that I do with Kulina, is connect with physicians, therapists, other allied health professionals, to let them know, hey, we're here. We see our patients every single week. And we can support your care plans. You don't have time to see your patients weekly. We usually see our patients for an hour every week, every other week for many months at a time. So we're able to really be on the front lines of supporting tangible changes in health outcomes. And most people aren't aware of that. Most healthcare professionals are not aware that dietitians can do this work. And to be honest, it's because a lot of dietitians, you know, don't take insurance. And so yeah. there is a limiting factor to be able to see a dietitian for the longer period of time that it takes to actually see changes in health. You know, most people aren't going to see tangible changes in their health within four sessions or even six sessions. Yeah. You know, we need some time with our patients to be able to see changes in lifestyle and behavior modification. Mm-hmm. You know, the research says that it can take an average of 3 months. And for some patients, it's longer. For some patients, it's shorter. So
yeah.
The awareness is really a huge challenge. And that's something we're really passionate about. Kulina is just screaming at the top of the hilltops. We're here. This is what we can do. This is how we do it. Like, let us help you.
Yeah, I think that's amazing and so important. So again, if anybody's listening and it's like, hey, I'd love to see an RD, like go call up your primary and say, hey, could I see an RD to help optimize whatever, whatever. And sometimes that can be the best way to become an advocate for yourself and say, I'd love to seek out some further resources, and then go and connect with Kulina beyond that. And I think you hit the nail on the head with something when talking about behavior change. And I think for a long time in health, we haven't really been approaching health as behavior change. We just say, oh, get the person the information. And then if change doesn't happen in their life or their health, like, it's their fault, right? But I don't really think that's fair. And I don't think that's an accurate way to grade somebody's performance and health unless we truly are helping them walk down this path to sustainable lifestyle behavior change. So how do you approach that differently at Kalina, using psychology and neuroscience and accountability to really help people grasp onto lifelong behavior change?
Yeah, you know, you really nailed it with that. It's education is one thing, you know, there is definitely a lack of education around evidence-based nutrition and certainly like providing people with trustworthy source of education so they understand their disease state, they understand their labs, they understand how what they eat impacts their medical condition. That is an important part of the equation. And knowledge is power. And we do that at Kalina. But that isn't the only thing that drives actual results for people to make changes. It really requires mindset shifts. It requires, as you said, accountability, collaborative care. So people feel like they are an active part in their experience, right? So instead of saying, you know, Jen, you need to gain this many pounds during your pregnancy at this cadence, and you have to eat these foods at this at these times, and make sure that you are tracking X, Y, and Z, right? Like, that is the education piece, but ultimately that's not personalized to you. And maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe your goal is to just get rest and make sure that you are adequately hydrated, right? And to move your body in a way that feels good. And I don't know what feels good for you at this stage in your pregnancy. When I was in my third trimester, I was doing SoulCycle. But a lot of women in their third trimester just want to go for walks, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it would be, we're doing our patients a disservice when we tell them that they have to follow a certain plan based on, you know, what we think is best for them. In order for us to see real change, our patients, it needs to be personalized. Our patients need to tell us what they want, what their behavioral readiness is. Like, yes, Tamar, I know that I need to eat more protein during my pregnancy, but every time I smell chicken, I want to throw up. And so, like, it's really important for us to meet our patients where they're at based on their readiness to change, their resources, their lifestyle. Let them tell us what their priorities are, what their motivations are, for them to connect their changes in their health with their overall values. And that is sort of like the cognitive work that we can do when we're thinking about changing people's health behaviors, is really having a better understanding of what their motivators are, what their strengths are, what their values are. How can we connect that with the changes that they're hoping to make in their health? What are their resources? What are their barriers? How can we create a sustainable plan that's actionable and measurable based on their stage of change, so they feel like they're getting wins and they feel confident and they have self-efficacy, right? So ultimately, we have to take into account all of these things when we are supporting long-term sustainable change in behavior, right? Because we could just say, here's the meal plan, you know, eat kale salads for lunch and make sure you have, you know, fruit with a snack and breakfast.
And then my favorite is when you call people non-compliant when they don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when you give them a stupid sheet of workouts at the end of their physical therapy appointment that nobody can understand. And then they come back and don't know any of the exercises and you're like, all right, non-compliant. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, there's exactly a better way.
Exactly. I know that non-compliant word is so triggering. It's like, it's very upsetting because it's you know, at the end of the day, in order for us to see actual change, it has to be personalized. It has to be nuanced to take into account people's culture, especially when it comes to food. Mm-hmm. I mean, food is, it plays so many roles in our lives. It's not just fuel. It's social interaction. It's joy. It's culture. It's family. There's just so many things, and we have to be sensitive to that when we are thinking about changing people's relationship with food.
I mean, that's everything. And really being able to say, well, this does matter. Like, individualizing and working with a dietitian does matter, because, you know, we can all scroll social media and look at all the pretty recipes and have this folder that's never touched of all these things that we're hoping to make and to make real change. But it never really happens, because that's not the reality within our life, within the resources that we have available, within the capacity of, you know, running around with kids and work and all of that stuff. So being able to have someone that can better direct what realistic goals can look like, I think it really helps to connect to how this is helping in my own life and my own body and my own goals. And I think, you know, one of the big things that people deal with, especially because stress, I would say, is on the rise, and anxiety, is that emotional type eating behavior. And how do we start to help someone? Like, are there tools that you can provide someone listening, you know, in terms of steps that they can start taking to address or becoming aware of this emotional type eating?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give everyone a disclosure that emotional eating isn't always bad. So when we talk about emotional eating, we have to talk about it in context. And sometimes it's important for us to emotionally eat to manage uncomfortable emotions. Mm. The problem with emotional eating is when we rely exclusively on food and eating to manage those emotions, and when emotional eating starts to have a negative impact on our life. Ultimately, you know, if we're feeling sad or mad or stressed and we eat to manage those feelings, usually it's not super effective. It might be effective in the short term, so maybe we'll feel better in the short term, but it actually won't solve the root of the problem. And so emotional eating can also be not something that we want to rely exclusively on, because it doesn't really work that well in the long term. It works great in the short term, and sometimes, you know, we just need a quick fix, and that's okay. I think when we talk about emotional eating, it's important for us to address those basic needs, right? So you're eating to satisfy or manage certain feelings. How can we make changes in your lifestyle that are more effective in managing those things? So, you know, at Kulina Health, we support our patients in lifestyle medicine overall, right? So we're registered dietitians, but we understand that nutrition doesn't exist in a silo. What we eat and how we eat is influenced by our lifestyle overall. So it's really important for us to address things like physical activity, stress management, sleep. You know, if you are sleeping less than 6 hours a night, you're much more likely to have insulin resistance. Insulin resistance can cause cravings for high carbohydrate, high sugar foods, which can also cause weight gain. So, like, they're all connected. And so it's really important for us to think about the root of this, right? And so if you're eating because you're tired and you're not sleeping, then, okay, how can we support you in having better sleep hygiene, right? Maybe you're eating because you're stressed. Okay, how can we support you in feeling less stressed or managing your stress in a way that is more effective? So I think it's really about getting at the root of those emotions within our scope of practice. As dietitians, we are not diving into, you know, psychology or trauma or anything in the past. We can support our patients in creating creating structure to make their life less stressful. And so those are the ways that we can support our patients in managing emotional eating, right? And really thinking about their relationship with food, right? If you know that you tend to lean on food when you experience a certain emotion related to an interaction that you have, you know, at work, how can we set you up for success where you are less likely to emotionally eat, you know, making sure that, okay, you know, that 3 o'clock meeting is really triggering because you're meeting with a coworker who you don't get along with. You tend to, you know, snack on candy. How can we make sure that you are adequately fueled at lunch with protein and fiber that makes you feel full? How can we plan to have healthy snacks in that meeting and drink lots of water and maybe do a little meditation before the meeting so you're more likely to self-regulate, right? So that's really the most effective way to manage those feelings in the long term.
No, I think that's so important to talk about. And I really appreciate how you bring up that not all emotional eating is bad eating.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the same way where if some people like to take naps or play video games or go for a run or lift weights when they get stressed out, it's not a bad thing. It just might become a bad thing if that's the only thing you do and you're doing it every day to manage your stress. You know, all of those can go too far as well. Same as reaching for a certain snack to help mitigate a little bit of stress. And I also think it's great that you bring up this interplay of, you know, we can't just isolate diet. The same way that in our space of physical therapy, we can't just isolate pain. You know, pain, diet, they're very emotionally tied and maybe tied into some historic traumas that people have. And while not, you know, trying to play therapist for them, we do need to be able to address the emotions and stresses that play into our patients' dietary needs or physical needs and be able to help them address that. And something that can also be very tied into emotion and trauma is weight loss. And I know that this is probably a huge thing that you work with clients on because everyone is looking for that quick fix. Everyone is trying to put down for a New Year's resolution, I want to lose 50 pounds or I want to lose 40 pounds. And so how can people start to approach weight loss a little more sustainably and maybe even create goals that can be a little more realistic and sustainable?
Yes, it is. You know, a New Year's is such a funny time because I think people have a heightened, people do have a heightened awareness around their health, which is so powerful. And I just love that. I love that, you know, every New Year, people are revisiting their goals and what's important to them. And health is a big part of that overall. Often weight is also a part of that. You know, the bad part about New Year's resolutions is that we aren't setting goals properly. And so we're not setting ourselves up for success when we set overly ambitious, unrealistic goals that are purely metrics driven and don't identify plan for executing those outcome measures and or a support system or resources or barriers, right? Yeah. So it's really easy to say, you know what, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this year or 50 pounds this year. And starting January 1, I'm cutting out sugar and I'm going to exercise 5 days a week. And I am going to cook every single meal, right? So I think that's what we tend to do. It's so extreme. And we often do it alone and we make the goals alone and we don't have accountability. We don't make realistic goals. We don't have time frame for those goals. We don't have a plan for those goals. And so I think it's really important when we're thinking about weight management or really any health goal for you to be realistic, right? Manage your expectations. Weight loss is different for everyone. There literally is no one therapeutic approach to weight management. It is so multifaceted. There's a lot that we know and there's a lot that we don't know. And it's important for us to understand that metabolic rate is variable based on genetics, medical condition, gender, age. there's a lot that goes into it. Hormone imbalance, hormone balance, right? So we can't predict a trajectory of how much weight we're going to lose in what time frame perfectly. We can barely do it imperfectly. So, yeah. You know, I think there are a lot of ways to have non-scale wins. Certainly managing your expectations, managing your patient's expectations, and experimenting and being okay with that. Sometimes, you know, with some patients, we can tweak the diet, we can tweak carbohydrates and see major results. With other patients, we tweak carbohydrates, we don't see any change. And so it's highly individualized. For me personally, when I go low carb, I actually gain weight. So once I started adding more carbohydrates back into my diet, and certainly like the complex high fiber carbohydrates, when I added those back into my diet, I actually saw that I was able to manage my weight better. So I think it's just very personalized and individualized. And I think when we think about setting goals around body weight, we also need to set goals around lifestyle and non-scale wins. You know, I have patients who have had significant changes in health markers, like hemoglobin A1C, cholesterol, and they've only lost, you know, 10 pounds, but they have completely changed their metabolic health and their lifestyle overall. You know, one of my patients, she has a thyroid condition. It's really hard for her to lose weight. I worked with her endocrinologist to support, you know, adding another medication. We changed her, we modified carbohydrates, we increased, we decreased, we did reverse dieting, we changed, you know, experimented with HIIT training versus, you know, low impact training. We did all the things, and she hasn't been able to lose more than 20 pounds, but she's never been healthier. She's so happy. She just finished running a marathon.
Wow.
So, you know, like, she's doing great.
And doing
so,
all right.
Yeah, she's doing great. So I think it's also important for us to not necessarily move away from the scale entirely, but when we're creating weight loss goals, we have to put that in the context of lifestyle overall. You want to lose weight, but ultimately, what is it that you want? You want to feel more confident in your clothes. Yeah. Maybe that means changing body composition, right? And so you won't see much movement on the scale because you're gaining muscle mass. And so, maybe you want to feel more energized, or have less pain, right? So we need to make sure we're keeping track of that data too when we think about the overall weight loss, when we have the overall weight loss goals conversation.
I think that's so incredibly important. And hopefully, you know, again, especially in the new year, helping people rewrite what these goals really look like and being able to say, okay, I'm going to, like, maybe the goal is now I'm going to work with someone one-on-one and identify really what that plan kind of looks like rather than just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that something sticks. And when we talk about measurements as well, I think something that gets thrown around a lot is, especially when it comes to weight loss, is just, well, you just need less calories in than calories out, and mm-hmm. you know, and tracking your macros, and that's what's going to help you lose weight. Everything else doesn't really matter. Eat whatever. So how do you guys kind of approach, you know, this kind of mentality of calories in, calories out?
Yeah, it's so funny because I feel like we try to sell nutrition as being simple. Like, we want to say, oh, take this pill or cut out this food group, you know, and it's simple. You'll lose the weight. But it's actually not simple. And, you know, I love to say this. My co-founder Vanessa says this all the time. Nutrition is not sexy. It's work. You know, it's very, very nuanced. There are so many factors that go into weight management from genetics to hormones, like gave that example before about thyroid and the thyroid hormone and insulin resistance. Both thyroid hormones and insulin have a huge impact on our body fat mass and our ability to lose weight. And, you know, there you can, I think some people would argue, like, you can biohack and, you know, do all these things by cutting this out or taking this pill. But ultimately, that's not always true. You can't biohack your way out of everything. And biohacking isn't always sustainable in the long term. And so you have to really find something that works for you. The reality is that, like you said, people have children, people have jobs, they can't dedicate hours cooking and grocery shopping and tracking their food and counting their macros. And even if they did do that, it might not work. And it might do more harm than good in terms of relationship with food.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for us to demystify that. Like, it's not simple, actually. And that's why it's so helpful to work with a professional, because it's quite complicated. There's a lot that goes into it. It could be tweaking a very small thing that has a huge impact, or it could be doing, you know, a full on rehaul, right? It depends on the individual and their lifestyle, and everybody's lifestyle is different. So, you know, calories in, calories out is, yes, calories are important, but they're not the only part of the equation when it comes to weight management.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. And again, people look for the sexy, catchy solution, and being able to say calories in, calories out sounds easy. That's not exactly how it works in real life. And there's different research. I saw on a friend of mine's page who published, you know, the research on people who do try tracking calories, and kind of like you alluded to, the anxiety that starts to produce because of how much you actually need to do to accurately track calories. And that can be a path down to not having as great a relationship with food or the process. Tamara, I think this has been so valuable. I so much appreciate the way that you approach things, the way that you're approaching working with patients and helping get them on a sustainable path with Kalina Health. Can you talk to us about where people can find out more about you, maybe find out how to work with Kalina Health, or just continue to learn from you online?
Yeah. Well, it's so awesome to speak with you guys. It's so great to talk to other allied health professionals about lifestyle and nutrition overall. You can find us on kalinahealth.com. You can also find us on Instagram at Kalina Health. We actually, as I mentioned earlier, we take insurance, and you actually don't always need a referral from your doctor. Actually, people don't need a referral from their doctor. So they can access our services directly without having a referral. You can go to our website, and we do free discovery calls with our patients. So if you're interested in learning more about our services, you can hop on a call with one of our support coordinators, and they can tell you more about Kalina, tell you more about our team of dietitians, and help to match you with the best dietitian. Or you can email us directly from our website and schedule directly via our contact form. So it's actually really easy to access our care. We do complimentary insurance verifications. So before your first session, we'll be able to let you know what your coverage is, so you don't have any weird surprises. And yeah, we try to just make it as easy as possible for everyone, because life is pretty hard.
Exactly. That's honestly so great. And I have actually saved one of the recipes. It's like a quick, easy snack that's on Kalina Health. So definitely go check out their Instagram. I've already sent one of them to Dom in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. He's the chef in the house.
That's so. How I know what's for dinner. I open up my DMs and I figure out what Jen may have sent me that day.
Just believe it or not. not, my husband is the chef in the house too.
I love it.
I'm a dietitian.
So great. Well, thank you so much for all your information, the work that you're doing, and really just trying to reach more people and bring it to this one-on-one care to be more accessible. I think that's so massively huge and so needed, something we don't hear about a lot. So I think the work that you guys are doing is really incredible. So thank you.
Thank you both.
Such a great interview with Tamar, and really talking through what it means to have personalized nutrition, getting accessibility to these services. So if you have any interest, we'll have all of their information linked up down in the show notes. And remember, come join us in the Move to Improve Challenge. You can still use that code MOVE to get $5 off. That discount only lasts this week only. We're starting Move to Improve on March 6th. So make sure you go down to that link, gen.health/move, and join us today. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.